This is Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, President Trump links autism to acetaminophen use during pregnancy, but the science connecting autism and Tylenol is not settled. We'll hear from a Wisconsin autism researcher on what is known.
That's just ahead. First, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. I'm here with my colleague, Courtney Everett. Hi, Courtney.
Good morning, Kate. It's great to be here.
And we're here to ask you to invest a few minutes of time to support your WPR listening.
Listener support makes up the largest piece of the funding for the programs that you count on. That's why your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
And you've heard us say it before, it's listeners who are the single largest source of funding for WPR. This summer, federal funding for public media, it was eliminated, making listener support more important than ever. There are challenges ahead, but together we can keep WPR strong. So give now to support the programming that enhances your day at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You enjoy listening to Wisconsin Public Radio in part because we're commercial free. That means we depend on other sources of funding.
And the largest and most reliable piece of the funding for WPR, that comes from you. Your support really makes all the difference. It is the backbone of how things work around here. And when you give, you keep WPR's independent news, our conversations, the entertainment on the air for yourself and for everyone. So make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you for being a WPR listener, and thank you to everyone who's already a member. It's listener support, your support, in fact, that makes WPR an unparalleled resource in Wisconsin and beyond.
Because WPR is your radio home, support it now. Make WPR's trustworthy journalism, the thought-provoking conversations, all the sound-rich stories that take you there, make it all possible with your first ever gift of $10 or $20 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I think it's a great business model in that it operates using donations from people and donations from corporations. It works. I'm happy to donate because I think it's so important. And I'm happy to donate more because I know there's some people out there that can't. It's just great company in the house. I'm Mary from Menominee, and Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for everyday listening.
Give at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. It is the Fall Member Drive. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with Courtney Everett. Listener support is the biggest source of funding for WPR, and that is why your gift of $10 a month or $100 a month, whatever amount you set it at, it has an important impact.
Supporting Wisconsin Public Radio right now is a great thing to do with a few minutes of your time. All we need is your name, contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay.
And think about how your gift supports the stories, the programs, the conversations that keep you connected to the world, that keep you connected here at home in Wisconsin. So give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And it's Tuesday, so we have a special offer for you because Tuesdays are just better than Mondays. It is a $12 Tuesday, so today only, ask for your WPR Canvas backpack when you give that $12 a month or more so you can support the WPR programs that you value and add this functional and fun bag to your collection. Ask for yours now with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're not a sustainer, become one now. It is easy to set up. You'll make ongoing monthly donations to provide reliable support for the programs you love. And you can do that from your bank account or credit card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And a shout out to Holly in Green Bay who says, I want to support the local radio programming that WPR brings to the people of Wisconsin. Thank you, Holly.
Join Holly now with your gift. It's powerful. It makes a difference at WPR.org. And thank you for your support.
It's Wisconsin Today. Yesterday, President Trump announced an alleged tie between acetaminophen, the active ingredient in Tylenol, and autism, and promoted a lesser-known medication that could be used as a treatment for the disorder.
The president said at a White House address that there is a relationship between acetaminophen and autism and urged people to avoid taking the medication.
You know, the way I look at it, don't take it. Don't take it. There's no downside in not taking it.
The Food and Drug Administration had previously said the agency has not found clear evidence that acetaminophen is linked with autism, but advises patients to speak with a healthcare provider.
Autism researchers have pushed back at claimed links between acetaminophen and autism. The Coalition of Autism Scientists says this claim is irresponsible and potentially dangerous, arguing that the science around autism is more nuanced.
Amy Van Hecke is a professor at Marquette University and director of research at Next Step Clinic at Centers for Independence in Milwaukee. Amy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we heard that statement from President Trump, don't take it. But an FDA statement that came out associated with this conference says, quote, to be clear, while an association between acetaminophen and autism has been described in many studies, a causal relationship has not been established, and there are contrary studies in the scientific literature. Okay, how do we sort it out? What do we know about acetaminophen and Tylenol and the risk of autism?
So it's a really good question. You know, I think in the autism research world, we're always trying to better understand what factors contribute to autism. What things can we point to? And I think there is this push for what I call reductionism of what would be the easy answer? Is there one easy answer? And unfortunately, as you mentioned, it's more nuanced. It's not going to be that easy answer. And I think the Tylenol studies, the real sort of issue there was that the earlier studies that did show a very slight risk. So I think it was a 5% increase in mothers who had taken Tylenol in pregnancy versus those who had not. The studies were not as well controlled as they needed to be and didn't really compare within a family. So things like shared genetic factors or children within one family with different pregnancies who did and did not get Tylenol. And once we include those kind of data, we see that relationship disappear. So this really speaks to the fact that likely it's not Tylenol that was the issue to begin with. It was a shared genetic issue. It was fevers. It was some other factor that had gone unmeasured in those early studies. And so as much as I think folks want sort of that simple answer, the real answer is much more nuanced, that there are more complex factors at work here, and it won't be this one simple, easy answer.
Right. And that correlation and causation question, I've seen it suggested, well, during pregnancy, women will take acetaminophen to control fever, to control pain. Maybe the thing that's causing that fever and that pain, maybe that's the thing that could be correlated with autism. I'm not saying it is, but that's one possible explanation here. Does that make it harder to tease this out?
It does. It does, because it's really what you're looking at then is a third factor, right? A third potentially unmeasured factor. And there's some recent evidence from a large population-based study in Japan that actually did look at those third factors and included this idea that, hey, if it's pain or fevers, what happens with genetic predispositions to that, right? And so they actually looked at autistic traits in parents and found that higher genetic loadings for autistic traits in parents was also related to more experiences of pain. So is that the factor that really is explaining any of this relationship that is there? So that was an interesting thing to kind of add to that. What we know is really that it likely is not the Tylenol. So the most recent studies really are showing that this relationship is sort of a proxy, I would say, for other things that are going on, more likely genetic things or environmental things that are common in those families.
All right, somebody's out there listening, they're pregnant, and they're looking at this and scratching their head, what do I do? It seems like the ultimate guidance from the FDA is, hey, talk to your doctor about taking this medication, which I think they say about any medication during pregnancy. Does that much change, really, for that pregnant woman right now?
I would like to say no. I would like to say to pregnant women everywhere to not be scared and to not drastically change what your doctors have been telling you to do. We do know, and this is the irony, I think, in this whole situation, is that fevers themselves, fevers during pregnancy, are a factor that contributes to autism in offspring. So, you know, if you're ignoring the fever and not taking Tylenol, trying to quote unquote tough it out, you're actually potentially getting in a more of a risk situation than if you weren't. Following that advice, there are the other painkillers that are out there are known to be much more dangerous in pregnancy than Tylenol. This was always, you know, when I had my babies, it was, well, it was the safe painkiller. Of course, you don't want to take anything for an extended period of time. That's, you know, indicating an underlying medical issue that you need to have addressed. But not to be so scared and to just not take it, that is bad advice.
I want to touch on another part of this announcement, this idea, this cancer medication, lesser known leucovorin, a form of treatment for autism. As I've seen the studies out there, it looks like, hey, for some people with certain manifestations and causes of autism, this thing shows promise. What do you read into this?
I would agree with that statement. So I think the key, though, is to understand that nuance of science, that this is a subgroup. And so when I look at those studies on leucovorin, what I see are subgroups who have this cerebral folate deficiency, which is actually very hard to measure at this point in time and kind of unreliable to measure. So it's not an easy test you can go get at Walgreens if your child has this. It might involve a spinal tap, for example. So that's invasive. And so for a subgroup, this might be an issue and this might be a treatment. But when we look at those studies and we see that, oh, they selected their participants in those studies based on having cerebral folate deficiency. And then when they supplemented, they appear to improve. Well, of course they did because they had it, you know, so it's kind of this circular logic. And we don't know whether that applies to the general population of people on the spectrum. So I think it's emerging, I would say, for this subgroup, but we just don't know if this is a widespread effect that would be safe or helpful or potentially not helpful or not safe.
Amy, we'll leave it there for now. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Amy Van Hecke is a professor at Marquette University, director of research at Next Step Clinic at Centers for Independence in Milwaukee. Been talking about President Trump's statements about autism yesterday.
Coming up on Wisconsin Today, about 7,000 people in our state are living with HIV. The head of a Milwaukee healthcare provider has been named the new president of the International Academy of Sex Research.
It's great to have that knowledge exchange and see how we help end the HIV epidemic here in the U.S.
That conversation is ahead on WPR News.
This is Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Coming up, thousands of Wisconsinites live with HIV. A Milwaukee healthcare CEO talks about his new role to help end the epidemic in the U.S.
First, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. Courtney Everett is in the studio with us. Hey, Courtney.
Hey, Rob. Good morning.
Good morning. The largest source of funding for WPR programs is from listeners like you, and this drive is your chance to support all the programs that you listen to all through the year. Take that important step when you donate right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks to member support, Wisconsin has a robust public radio network for programs that inform and engage and inspire. But with the elimination of federal funding for public media last summer, member support is more important than ever. Help us keep WPR strong together. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Just had that conversation about autism and connections with medications, an announcement from the White House, and we brought you some expertise, somebody who is working on this issue, this story, this research each and every day. And that's the kind of thing we do all the time here on Wisconsin Today. Take that thing you might have seen in the headlines and help make sense of it and what it means maybe for your own life. Well, how does that happen? WPR's listeners support it. That means that when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you make that kind of conversation possible. Choose an amount that works for you. Take just a couple few minutes and then make your gift.
Whether you've given before or maybe you're making your first ever donation, sign up for ongoing monthly gifts.
Choose the amount that works for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It just takes a few minutes. Once it's set up, then your support for the programs you count on is always current.
Many of us are committed to making our communities better. Maybe you help out at the local school, pick up litter in your neighborhood, or perhaps you cook a meal for friends or family who need support. Your financial contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio makes the community a better place too.
Your investment, along with donations from a lot of other people, then makes the independent journalism, the important conversations on WPR News available for everybody. We are proud to be an important part of this Wisconsin community. In large part, it's thanks to you. Join in now with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
My name is Sarah, and I live in Madison, Wisconsin. I would tell a friend that they should join in listening to Wisconsin Public Radio because it's one of the coolest sources of interesting news and stories and happenings of the day. If I get those news segments during my time listening to public radio in the car, I have a pretty informed sense of what's going on in the world that day and can feel like an informed, ready-to-go citizen.
We're listener-supported radio. That means we count on money from people like you, people who rely on WPR to bring them something special every day. Go to WPR.org and click donate.
You can make that donation online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. It's Wisconsin Today. Courtney Everett in the studio with us during our fall member drive. Your support makes important news and great conversations you enjoy on WPR possible. Your gift of $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, is the right amount to give.
The little things we spend money on, they do add up. Perhaps it's that morning coffee or cookie, bag of chips, or maybe it's that, TV network you subscribe to. Well, you might spend $20 a month on small expenses, but they're an important part of your day.
And so is listening to WPR. Like the money you spend on a well-deserved treat, make your gift of $20 a month now for the programs that enrich your daily life at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You are part of Wisconsin Public Radio's community of listeners. Whether you've been listening for years or just a few months, you can become part of our community of members, people who support the news and information, and of course shows like Wisconsin Today that they value.
If you've never given before, start maybe with a gift of $120, or better yet, make it an ongoing gift of $10 a month. Your contribution of any amount makes you a member of WPR, and because the largest piece of our funding comes from members, you'll really make a difference. It all starts with your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we do have a special offer today. All you have to do is ask for your WPR Canvas backpack. And that is when you give $12 a month or more. Wear it, show it off, show your WPR program support. And this backpack is only available for $12 a month today. That is $12 Tuesday. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you're a sustaining member, thank you. Make today the day you increase your support of WPR by $5 or $10 a month. And hey, spread the word to people you know. Encourage them to listen and encourage them to give. It all happens at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And Rob, you're going to love this. Greta in Madison says, I start every morning with Wisconsin Today.
Oh, great.
And I love WPR. Well, thank you so much, Greta. We really appreciate it.
Hi, Greta. Glad you're listening. I bet right now. Thank you so much for your gift. And thanks for getting it, Greta. Thanks for getting how it works. You listen. You count on WPR to start your day. And you understand that we count on you to help pay for it. You can join Greta with your support right now. It'll take just a few minutes, a great way to start your day. Give online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support.
Now, about 7,000 Wisconsinites are living with HIV. That's according to the most recent statewide data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
A Milwaukee-based healthcare provider, Vivint Health, provides clinical care for more than 18,000 people in six states who are either living with HIV or who are vulnerable to sexually transmitted infections.
The organization's president and CEO, Brandon Hill, is the newly elected president of the International Academy of Sex Research, which was founded in the 1970s. Hill will hold both leadership roles, helping to advance research and prevention of HIV. Brandon, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you very much for having me. Excited to be here.
What is this academy and the research that is coming out of it?
Sure. So the International Academy of Sex Research, also known as IASR, is a longstanding, primarily academic research academy, bringing researchers together from all over the world to address the pressing sexual health and sexual research needs of the broader community. It is an academic environment in which folks are sharing their research. We're learning from each other in different countries and different global contexts, and ultimately trying to improve the work here in the U.S. all the way to Wisconsin. And beyond.
I wonder, how might your role leading Vivint Health inform your work, you know, leading this global research body and what it pursues?
Yes, it's it is rare to have both a healthcare executive and practitioner and researcher leading the organization. I was excited for the opportunity to move learnings from all over, you know, the globe into action and see how they can help us here at home. We know there's a lot particularly related to HIV that we've learned in the global context. And it's great to have that knowledge exchange and see how we help end the HIV epidemic here in the US. And through the work that Vivint Health does every day is really the methodology that's going to end the HIV epidemic here domestically.
How does sex research contrast outside of our borders with researchers who are not in the U.S.?
The Academy is made up of folks from all over the world.
Uh-huh.
And I would say mostly we partner with individuals in Europe and in North America, Canada, and Mexico. And everyone is addressing sexual health and HIV and STI in very different ways, very different systems, different cultures. When we're all together, we kind of can see where we can borrow and learn from one another and actually improve the work that we're doing back home. So the meeting that we have, that's really one of the purposes for that. We also learn on how to work in different environments. You know, the U.S. is not the first to have a challenging research funding environment or a challenging administration that may not support the research. And now's a real time for us to learn from some of our international colleagues on how they've responded and have continued their research even in those uncertain environments.
I want to zoom in on one of the biggest advancements in HIV prevention, and that was the development and distribution of PrEP, the pre-exposure prophylaxis, and the medication being approved by the FDA over a decade ago. How effective is it at preventing HIV?
Oh, PrEP, and now we have different modes of PrEP, but mm-hmm. overall, PrEP for HIV prevention is over 90% effective, you know, when adherent and when it follows the treatment regimen, you know, almost to 99%. This is one of the most remarkable advancements that we've had for a while. And bearing in mind, for most, I'd say since the 1940s, condoms were our only, our primary mode of biomedical prevention. So this is a leap year forward for us.
And at the same time, though, there are studies that say, look, even though there is widespread adoption of PrEP, it still lags behind in some communities that really need it. Other population groups with higher rates of HIV, including sex workers, transgender individuals, and prisoners. And these groups may face significant stigma and discrimination. Do you see a stigma affecting who has access to PrEP and HIV care?
There definitely is a differential in who has awareness and access. Even before we can look at whether someone is adopting or using the medication, we want to know whether they're aware that even is even an option for them. And historically, there has been differentials by race, by sexual orientation, by economic status on who has awareness to new health technologies. And that was no different for PrEP. So we have seen it's been slower to be adopted among trans or gay or bisexual men of color. That is a group that we do see new infections and, you know, not decreasing new HIV cases among that population. And so there's a lot more effort to really engage. Nationally, we need, you know, I think it's almost 1 million people who would be indicated for PrEP to take up PrEP in order for us to successfully reduce all new cases or new diagnoses in the U.S. So there's a huge gap here. And you, the folks you mentioned is exactly the population that are in that gap.
A lot more work to do. We're talking with Brandon Hill, president and CEO of Milwaukee-based Vibrant Health and newly elected president of the International Academy of Sex Research. Let's look at funding issues. You know, funding for HIV research and prevention programming has faced massive cuts on a federal level. Earlier this year, U.S. Department of Health and Human Services considered dismantling the CDC's HIV prevention division. What are you seeing out there? What CDC programming has Vibrant Health utilized in the past? How are you affected by these moves at the federal level?
At the onset of the year, we, like many recipients, the federal government was sending no reimbursement from February to, I'd say, about June for the grants that were held and no new award letters. Everyone who was out in the space providing prevention services were in limbo. Across the country, some organizations had to decide whether they would continue their programs, halt their programs, freeze their programs. And to be honest, we received very limited guidance because there was no guidance associated with the halting of reimbursing or renewing grants. That alone has had an impact on what services were available during that time period. Now at Vibrant Health, we were able to continue providing services. We treated our prevention services as key to the work that we do. It's not just about treatment and care. Preventing HIV is also our responsibility in our communities. And we were able to keep the work moving forward, though not at maximum, so minimally moving forward, or minimal capacity. I know other organizations were not, and it's yet to be seen what impact that could have. Another indirect consequence, it was very disruptive to the workforce of folks who do prevention. You know, people were having to decide whether this was the space that they could continue to work in with so much uncertainty on whether or not they would have funding for their role.
Bring us up to speed to the now. What is the situation now with federal funds and what are you projecting?
We're really in an unknown space. There's a lot that has that lives in the future in 2027. So if you look at H.R. 1, also known as the Big Beautiful Bill, a lot of those, the things that people were concerned about, don't take immediate effect. A lot of this is to be enacted in 2027. So between now and 2027, the how will be figured out. There were clear decisions on cuts that would be made or through that bill requirements that would be imposed on individuals like Medicaid recipients, whether or not we would have some institutes like Minority Health Institute or others. That's all coming in the future. And now we have to understand how we will deliver the grants that we currently have or the objectives of the grants within the confines of the restrictions in the bill, or the budget cuts that have been proposed. You know, huge, huge shifts will have to be made. And ultimately, the reality that's yet to be seen is people will not be able to get the level of care or the level of HIV prevention services that they're currently receiving. The one that's currently keeping us at less than 300 new diagnoses in Wisconsin.
I want to land here on the Academy, and I'm wondering if, because of its global reach and its global role, there are researchers who are looking at what's happening in the U.S., and I'm wondering what those conversations are like when, as you mentioned at the outset, you know, some researchers in parts of the world have seen what's happening in the U.S., shutting down, for instance, major HIV health programs. What is collaboration like right now when there are urgent needs and there are big, big changes happening in a first world country like the U.S.?
A lot of the researchers and a lot of the public are used to seeing large, big national data sets, data that comes from thousands and thousands of individuals. And at our last meeting, we really had to have a discussion on whether, you know, if there isn't the same level of funding that's available, if there isn't the same level of access to patient populations or community-based populations, how do we leverage working with the data that we all have? Many of the researchers, you know, have collected data in different geographies, and we don't often always think of, you know, combining that data or making sure that we can maximize its use. You know, while not ideal, it doesn't won't produce a nationally representative sample. We just really are starting to think about doing things differently, and so we'll have to really work with what's available and what we have.
Brandon, thank you for joining us.
Sure, my pleasure.
That is Brandon Hill, president and CEO of Milwaukee-based Vivint Health, who is also the newly elected president of the International Academy of Sex Research.
Still ahead on Wisconsin Today, a Madison indie rock band showcases the birds of Wisconsin in their new songs.
Hearing a cardinal or a sparrow and being able to pinpoint that, I think, is something that can spark joy.
The singer-songwriter from the band Quokka talks about weaving bird calls into the new album called Lifer. That's next on WPR News. It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The song we're hearing now is American Robin off the album Lifer from Madison indie rock band Quokka.
The album's 12 tracks are all named after birds that we commonly see here in Wisconsin, and the songs include recordings of each bird's unique call.
Aaron Gritch is lead singer, producer, and songwriter for Quokka, and he's here to tell us more about this new album. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So the album is called Lifer, and that has, from what I understand, this layered meaning. What does this word mean to you?
So to me, it means a couple of things. For one, myself, I'm a born and raised Wisconsinite, and I will be here forever, I know that much. So for myself, I am a Wisconsin lifer, but it also refers to the little badge you get on the popular Merlin birding app whenever you find a new bird, which is the tie-in to this album, an album entirely based around Wisconsin birds.
So as you get more birding experience, you know, spotting a lifer in some ways is about these rare sightings, but your album is really filled with these, you know, everyday birds that are all around us, like sparrows and cardinals and mourning doves, robins. Why did you decide to put your focus on these birds?
Yeah, I wanted it to be calls that were recognizable, things that you would walk around and hear in everyday life, especially around these parts. Because really, one of the main goals of this project is just to get people to listen while they're walking around and tune into their surroundings and maybe distinguish out a couple of the sounds, a couple of the different lives going on around you, hearing a cardinal or a sparrow, and being able to pinpoint that, I think, is something that can spark joy.
Where did you find these bird calls? Are they authentic to nature?
They are all from YouTube because I could not get a decent recording. There is only one that is mine, and that is at the end of the last song. There's about a 30-second outro of chirping birds, and that is in my wife's parents' backyard. And that was a little thing that I made just for her.
What is special about birding in Wisconsin in particular?
There's so much movement throughout the year. There's the migrations that come in the fall and the spring, and just the fact that we have so many good parks and waterways around here means there's a good variety of things that come and go, not to mention the various groups around here that are excited about it and get people excited. People like Dexter Patterson, areas...
BIPOC Birding Club.
Yeah, the very same. Areas like the International Crane Foundation up in Baraboo, the only one of its kind. Just, it feels like people around here are excited about the natural world and care about getting into different aspects of it.
I think I also hear in your songs how you can feel the passing of the seasons or the movement of the seasons through birds in a way. How do you feel about changing seasons and how what birds you see and how you identify the seasons with birds?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, as a Midwestern lifer, I can't live without the seasons. Like that helped me mark the passage of time. But some of the birds I selected in here are written around the seasonality and movement. The first song, Northern Flicker, is about a migratory sapsucker that takes its way down to Texas, Arkansas, Louisiana, Zydeco country during the winter, like so many Midwesterners, which is why I was happy to be able to fit an accordion into something to mark that. But also the Northern Cardinal, which sticks around all year and comes up to your window when nobody else will, making its call out in the middle of winter and trying to take those stories and those ideas and loop them into the way that we live as well.
Well, let's hear that first track called Northern Flicker. Let's take a listen. Northern Flickers are woodpeckers, so on a sonic level, you've got this woodpecker drumming sound in the background. How did this inform your approach to this song?
I mean, it was too cool to not put it in, and I tried to have it mimic somewhat of the FaceTime calling sound.
Okay.
Just to try to tie those two things together, and as far as the other calls go, not many other birds have a secondary percussive call to them, so something really unique about that species that I couldn't leave behind.
We're talking with Aaron Gritch, the lead singer, producer, and songwriter for the band Quokka. That's an indie band based in Madison. The newest album is called Lifer, and each track is focused on a different bird found in Wisconsin. We're going to move on to the red-winged blackbird. It's not a bird that usually gets a lot of love and attention, but you say it's your favorite. How did the red-winged blackbird win you over?
Well, it's always been my favorite from a standpoint of its time of appearance, that when you see it flying around, it's a mark that warm spring is coming, not just the robins showing up when we get fall, spring, and those slushy days. When you see a red-winged blackbird, it feels like there's warmth coming, and I've always loved them for that respect. They are, they can be described as jerks by some. I'm sure there's a lot of people that have different stories about being swooped at in parks or on walks or that sort of thing, but I wrote this song as sort of to empathize with them as being a small creature on this earth trying to defend one small parcel that you can call yours. I think there's a lot to be said for that. Granted, red-winged blackbirds tend to make 5 or 6 or 7 different nests with 5 or 6 or 7 different partners, so maybe it's not a perfect parallel, but just a little bit more empathy for those things trying to feel safe at home.
I want to take a listen to a beloved bird here in Wisconsin, the sandhill cranes. Let's spot the call. I was thinking about the line about falling in and out of place. What comes up for you with this song?
This is something that I think was a big question for myself in my early 20s of where do I want to be in the world? And the sandhill crane is a bird that goes thousands of miles through migration every year. It's in North America, it's in South America, there's cranes in Africa and Asia, and their characteristic is just a huge amount of movement. And going all of those places and wondering if any of them truly feel like home was the big question of falling in and out of place there, and truly what makes a home when you're constantly on the move like that.
That's beautiful. My favorite song is Chickadee because it reminds me of this song, Little Bird, Little Bird, that I'd play over and over to my kids when they were little. And it's the singer-songwriter Elizabeth Mitchell, and she calls out in the song, "Who knows a bird?" And a little toddler says, "Chickadee, chickadee, fly through my window, find molasses candy.
Chickadee, chickadee, fly through my window. Chickadee, chickadee, fly through my window. Chickadee, chickadee, fly through my window, find molasses candy."
Can you tell us a bit more about your tribute to chickadees?
Absolutely. So I wrote that song for Dexter Patterson. You know, he's an inspiration in the birding community, and I just messaged him one day and asked him what his favorite bird was while I was still picking out which ones to do, and I wrote that one, like I said, about its caching capabilities and that it's thing that it always remembers where it has seeds buried, and I thought that was just a very inspiring thing, being this little bird pretty far down the food chain as far as things go, planning for tomorrow, for next week, for next year, that it may or may not see, and the sense of optimism that it has to have imbued in it for that.
Oh, I love that so much. Aaron, this has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. Love public radio.
That is Aaron Gritch, the lead singer, producer, and songwriter for Quokka, an indie band based in Madison. We've been talking about the band's new album, Lifer, which has 12 songs, all written from a bird's eye view. And we'll go out on the track Chickadee.
When the sun comes through like it always has, I'm standing.
Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. Courtney Everett is in the studio with us, and we're here to raise the money that pays for the programs that you enjoy, programs like Wisconsin Today. Support from people like you is the largest piece of the funding for WPR programs. That's why your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
And as you likely know, Congress eliminated federal funding for public media last summer. This is a challenge, but WPR is as committed as ever to the communities we serve. WPR will remain a strong and vibrant service with your help right now. Support the programming you count on now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Just had that great conversation with Music, a band that did a whole album.
So good.
Yeah, a whole album based around birds of Wisconsin. We heard their songs, and it's something we like to do. We find people out there who are celebrating the things that make Wisconsin unique and special, often in, as in this case, very creative ways. Well, now WPR is listener supported. That means that conversations like that happen because you give. People like you make it all possible. Choose an amount that works for you. Take a few minutes and make your support for WPR online at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It is $12 Tuesday as well. Support WPR with a gift of that $12 a month or more, and you get a new WPR canvas backpack. This has Wisconsin state symbols and WPR branding, so it's more than just another canvas bag. This is a statement of your commitment to fact-based news and quality entertainment. And remember, this special offer is only available today. So make your gift of $12 a month now and ask for your WPR Canvas backpack at WPR.org or 888 202-2552.
Everything you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio is the result of thoughtful preparation. We do our homework so that you get the highest quality radio programs. Show your commitment to this quality. Commit now when you make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I like to listen to WPR because it informs me, enriches me, and also kind of challenges me. It's just wonderful. I listen the minute I wake up on the way to work, when the work day is done, in the evening, and we even have the radio on for our pets during the day. I became a sustaining member, first of all, because of the convenience. It helps me be a part of WPR in a significant way because it's ongoing. It's a way to keep the mission going, and my small part, I think, plays a part in that. I'm David from Stevens Point, Wisconsin. I encourage you to join me in sustaining Wisconsin Public Radio.
You can make your sustaining gift along with David. It takes just a few minutes online at WPR.org, or you can call 888-202-2552. It's Wisconsin Today. Courtney Everett in with us for our fall member drive. Join in with your gift right now because WPR's essential service is available to you and to your community, thanks to your support.
Chances are Wisconsin Public Radio has covered an issue close to you. Perhaps it's gardening. Well, we have Larry Mueller's Garden Talk. Maybe it's healthcare. And Wisconsin Today was just talking about the new administration changes when it comes to acetaminophen. All of these shows come together and we bring you those relevant, interesting, and enjoyable conversations because WPR touches your life. Make a gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Sometimes you actually get more than you pay for. WPR is one place where that's true every day. Think about a gift of $2 a day to support the radio programs you love.
And you can't buy for just $2, but or rather you can't buy much for that amount. But at Wisconsin Public Radio, $2 a day makes a lot of different topics happen. That's on Wisconsin Today, Morning Edition. And that works out to $60 a month. And you can make that gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
However you choose to give, thank you. Your support really does make a difference. And there's a little something more you can do to help. Encourage a friend to join the Wisconsin Public Radio community by listening, by sharing articles, and by making a gift themselves.
Spread that love. Tell your friends and family that you support WPR. Inspire them to make a gift at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
It is $12 Tuesday. We've got a special offer for you today only. Ask for the WPR Canvas Backpack when you give $12 a month or more. Support the WPR programs you value and add this functional and fun bag to your collection. Ask for yours now with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're anything like me, we know you have a lot of bags at home. I mean, that just happens. Your closet gets filled up with, you know, the tote bags and everything like that. But this WPR Canvas Backpack, this one makes a statement. So someone can maybe talk to you about it, and then you can share with them, you know what, I donated to WPR. I made my gift. So if you're not a sustainer, become one right now. It is so easy to set up, and you will make ongoing monthly donations to provide reliable support for the programs you love. Now, you can do that from your bank account or credit card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Susan in La Crosse says, I enjoy learning new things from all of WPR's programming. Thank you so much, Susan. Glad to be learning right here alongside you. How about you? What have you learned? Maybe just in the last week here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Put a value on that and make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, Rob, you know what I learned? That bird music exists.
Yeah.
And it's in Wisconsin.
That's your rock music.
I know. That's what's amazing. And it's just like Rob said earlier, these shows find the guests. They find the people with these stories and are able to share what matters to Wisconsin. So tune in. And of course, join with your donations and support the WPR programs, excuse me, that you value. And you can add all of that into your daily routine. And if you're not a sustainer, become right now.
You can do it online at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you. Wisconsin Today producers include Trevor Hook, Avery Lee Rogers, and Rochelle Wilson.
Our technical directors are Tyler Ditter and Sarah Hopeful. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Thanks for listening to WPR News.